Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is the show where we hear from farmers, processors, chefs, hunters, and thinkers. We'll be talking about food, which is almost as good as eating it. Imagine a lovely July day. You're in Cornerbrook, Newfoundland. You get on the TCH and head south, down past Pinchgut Lake, past Blue Ponds, past George's Lake, beyond both Stephenville turnoffs. You go past a bunch of lovely but generally empty pastures, cross a few salmon rivers, then take the turnoff to Loch Leven. It's warm, clear, sunny. There are people in the swimming hole in Loch Leven, you know, the one by the bend in the road by the bridge. Then we stop into a well-kept farm to visit a farmer. I've bought vegetables and the odd cut of meat from him for decades now. We go into the kitchen. Come on along. Sit down at the table with us. We'll have a bit of a chat.
Well, my name is Elvis Gillen. The farm is called Riverbrook Farms. Myself and my wife, Marilyn, run the farm. And we do all of our marketing with a direct farm market. Our own farm market in the only city on the west coast of Newfoundland, Cornerbrook, which is an hour and a half away from the farm.
Hmm. Do you remember what inspired you to become a farmer?
I do. I often think about what inspired me to become a farmer. 4-H.
4-H?
Yes. I took gardening in 4-H, and I really enjoyed it. I took several things through 4-H, including cooking and baking and carpentry work, but yeah. Nothing stood out like gardening. One time I visited my father-in-law, my first father-in-law, and he had a small international Cub tractor. And I asked him, could I try it? And he said, yes. And I was amazed at when the nice green sod would turn over and produce this lush brown loam. And I asked him, could I plow myself up a little vegetable plot and grow some vegetables in it? And he said, sure. And that started it. And that was 42 years ago.
Is there still 4-H around here?
No, sadly there's not.
How many of those would have gone into farming in some way, or even just have a garden in their backyard, wherever they lived?
I think everybody.
Yeah.
Because it was really deja vu for me a couple of days ago. I got a cousin that moved back home. And his best friend moved back home to St. David's. They're both over 65 years old. And I seen them walking out of my cousin's homestead. And I looked, and each one of them was planting a little garden for the summer. And I said, wow, we're looking back in time at this, right? So quite a few of them did continue on to grow home gardens for themselves.
Who else, were there other people who influenced you as you started? Were the people who you got advice from who were influential?
I've always been a good listener.
Yeah.
And everybody that I ever met in this area, the older people that was farming before me, I always felt some of them had some knowledge that I could use. And I would often visit their farms, tell them that I was wanting to become a farmer. Listen to them, get some advice from them. Some guys might have been really good at growing potatoes. Some guys might have been better at cabbage.
Yeah.
And I would talk to them, pick their brains. I never, ever went outside of this province that I didn't visit a farm and listen to farmers and talk to them. And back when I started, sorry, we didn't have the internet. You couldn't Google something.
Right.
So it was great to talk to people who had experience.
Do you have people coming to you now asking, so how do I keep the cabbage moths off or whatever?
Not a big lot.
Yeah.
Vegetable farming in this geographic region here, there's known as Bay St. George South, is almost non-existent now.
Yeah.
Not many even small home vegetable gardens.
Yeah.
Probably only one other commercial farm here in this area.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I was at the ripe age of 19, if the vegetable farmers in this area, that's excluding beef and sheep, but there was a lot of crossover. I mean, a lot of vegetable farmers did have sheep or beef or something. But if the vegetable farmers wanted to have a meeting on a Wednesday night to discuss something, whether it be marketing or something. We had either the Legion or the Lions Club. There would be at least 30, 35
really?
Farmers.
Now it can happen in a kitchen.
Yeah, or you could do it in the cab of a pickup truck. That's right.
I mean, vegetables are often touted as one of the things that can grow well in Newfoundland Labrador, to some extent, some of them anyways, and it's a sector that we could really grow in. But what are the things that vegetable farming needs? Obviously, it's declined here in this region, and it's declined in many other regions here. What does it need to get a boost back, even to where it used to be?
I don't think it may never go back to where it used to be. And you're right. We will say the traditional vegetables grow quite well there. It is a short growing season, but it's a season that tends for stuff to do well. We may be a little later getting going in the spring, but we can extend that into the fall quite easily. But things changed. Marketing became the most significant change. When I first started, you could go from here to Stephenville with a pickup load of vegetables and sell that all the way along to the mom and pop operations, little corner grocery stores that would, you know, buy traditional vegetables from you, potatoes, turnip, cabbage, beets, carrots. Also, some of the food chains then was operated locally, and they would certainly buy stuff once a week into the back door. Where the national chains now don't want to do backdoor sales, don't want to receive stuff backdoor on a weekly basis. They want to buy from really well-organized farm operations, and they probably want to do it from a centralized wholesale business. Yeah. And in most cases, that's their own wholesale business. So marketing changed, and we didn't change to keep up to it. What I see from my fellow farmers in Nova Scotia, that they join large cooperatives, formed large cooperatives. In some cases, we'll sell under two different names. Can be as many as five farmers, and they'll sell under two, sometimes three different names. And they're doing a real good job. A lot of that produce ends up coming in there. I can't blame the retailers to give up, you know, trying to deal with smaller operations. It had to be frustrating at the best of times. But as farmers, we didn't change. And here about 15 years ago, we wanted to change. We wanted to make a change in our operation here. We wanted to invest some money. And we found that the retail sector and the wholesale sector that we were selling into was going by the wayside. And we had always had some direct marketing sales, so we decided we would go full out, build a farm market in the city of Corner Brook, and concentrate on that. That have worked well for us, but again, I think that's limited. There's only so many people can do that. And there's only we're probably at a saturation point. We're growing sometimes upwards of 35, maybe even 40 acres of produce there. But that's it. That would be the limit. And it is enough to keep myself and Marilyn going, and probably 8 employees. So, but if we really wanted to do a major expansion, we would certainly have to look into going a different route with marketing.
In the long run, if you have a variety of farmers, say you had 35 farmers, you can't have 35 markets.
No.
Each individual. So the idea of having some sort of cooperative market or cooperative cold storage, have been discussions about that in the past?
There have been. And I go back so far that it makes me really feel old. But back in the 80s, with some help from the provincial government there was something called VMAL, Vegetable Marketing Associates Limited. And it was just pure organized marketing. And it seemed to work really well. But I think it lacked an education factor, for the farmer, education for the wholesaler, retailer, and it kind of, I think, fell apart from the inside out. The education part for the farmer, back then farmers were used to selling everything that they grew, and they didn't really know about a Canada number one grade or grading standards that most of the stores were starting to look for. And farmers got frustrated with their own business, because VMAL was owned and operated by the farmers. And then the next thing, the same farmer who was a full-time member of VMAL was also doing marketing on his own. Mm-hmm. So it it fell by the wayside. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe it was a little bit ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a great organization. Mm-hmm. The concept was good and everything. And it's too bad that there wasn't more work put into saving it.
Yeah. So knowing what you know now, if you were to start again, what would you do? Are there things you'd do differently?
Go to school and be a teacher.
Forget this whole game.
They get 2 days off every week and 2 or 3 months every summer and retire after 30 years. No. Would I have done anything different? I don't know. I tried to organize the farmers in this area when we done our expansion. Yeah. Tried to get a cooperative going. And most of my fellow farmers was really afraid of the unknown.
Yeah.
And some of them, they felt more comfortable of owning 100% of nothing than owning probably 5% of something that was going to be risky.
Yeah.
And I seen it was going nowhere fast. So we took our money and we invested in, you know, built the market and invested in our machinery here, and it was a good investment. I went farming for the simple reason I enjoyed what I was doing. I still enjoy it yet today. I love to get up in the morning and go out of doors, and if you're living on a farm, you don't have to look far to know you got something to do. I really enjoy taking a small seed and putting it in the ground and nurturing it and watching it develop into a product that I can sell.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody is cut out to be a direct marketer. It takes a certain person for that, because some days is not easy. When you're dealing with the public, but you always keep a smile on your face, and the customer is always right. And at the end of the day, at least when you close your market and go home, whatever money you made, you're in control of it. You're not waiting for some of the big national grocery stores to wait 6 weeks to send you your money.
Right. How have the consumers changed over the years that you've had a market? Are they asking for different things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Consumers have changed. Eating habits have certainly changed. Everybody's a lot more health conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Newfoundland, we still got the traditional people who are cooking jigs dinners twice a week.
Yeah.
And want the basics, but you know, we see a lot bigger consumption of broccoli and cauliflower, lettuce and greeny leafy vegetables and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there's a change.
Yeah.
So the world have changed. It's a smaller world we're living in now.
Yeah.
I can remember, you know, 35 years ago, you couldn't go in a grocery store in Cornerbrook in the wintertime and buy fresh broccoli and cauliflower.
Really?
So people bought it and blanched it and froze it and added it for the wintertime.
So the expectations have changed too. They expect, I'm sure people come into your market first of the season wanting something that doesn't get harvested till October. Where are the pumpkins?
You're exactly right. Like, there's not a big percentage of the population that really understands how everything grows within a season. So if I want you to eat green peppers from my farm and I want you to eat locally, you know, you're only going to be eating them probably 4 or 5 weeks of the year. Like, what do I expect you to do the rest of the time?
Do you have a song that you sing on the tractor that I should use in the background?
Kind of like Harry Ibbs, that one, Row on Row. I really like that. I'm a big fan of Harry Ibbs, too.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone blessed these seeds I sow. Someone warmed them from below till the rain comes tumbling down. Pulling weeds and picking stones, man is made of dreams and bones. Feel the need to grow my own, 'cause the time is close at hand. Rain, full rain, sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain, to my body and my brain, to the music from the land. Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
In terms of well, vegetable farmers, but other farmers as well, they talk a lot about trying to get new entrants into the area. Do you have any advice, wisdom, suggestion? How do you attract somebody to a sector that means a fair bit of work and a fair bit of risk sometimes?
Well, first of all, a new entrant has got to have the passion and the desire to want to go farming, or been around some family member that had a little farm or something.
Yeah.
And if that's not possible, and you're still interested in farming and stuff, then there becomes the part of being tutored somewhere on a farm. And the sad thing is, I'm going to retire in 2 years' time. I may not even live here anymore.
Mm.
I know I've learned a lot of knowledge in the last 41 years. A lot of good stuff and a lot of bad stuff. I've done a lot of stuff trial and error, and some stuff worked really well and some stuff didn't. And so is that going to leave when I leave?
Mm.
Like, I spent my lifetime, like I told you, talking to older gentlemen and getting the knowledge they had before they passed on or they gave up farming. You can't Google everything. You can't Google a lot of life's experience.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, and to me that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to Google when is a good time to plant beans, and it may say April the 30th. Well, I'm sorry, that's not in Bay St. George South, you know.
Sure.
In my opinion, government has got the right, they got the right initiative. They want to bring agriculture back to some form or shape in Newfoundland. I think there's nothing but room for growth, because I know 99.9% of my customers would want to eat local when they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's more nutritious. They know we're way less dependent in this province on any kind of chemicals.
Mm-hmm. We're,
my opinion, we're still pristine there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the bug population or the disease, like, you know, and just across the Gulf here.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have some of the problems that they got. So we can raise a crop that's way more healthy for a person.
Mm-hmm.
And people know that. So what our government needs to do, I started off from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
42 years ago, I just carved out a farm, and it took a lot out of me to do that. But government, if they're really serious about this, the direction maybe they need to take is start buying back some of those operating farms,
mm-hmm.
and lease them to new entrants as a turnkey operation.
Mm-hmm.
Things are so expensive today and have changed so much that I don't think I could carve out a farm from scratch
mm-hmm.
in today's environment. And that's just one suggestion how things could be done.
Mm-hmm.
My farm will be for sale in 24 months. But I don't really expect any 25-year-old to walk in off of the street and give me what I want for my farm. And
yeah.
my farm is certainly worth it, because I've put a lifetime into it. All the infrastructure is there, everything is covered, machinery, buildings,
mm-hmm.
market,
mm-hmm.
and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a lifetime to get that. So for
mm-hmm.
a young person to walk in and say, well, here's the mm-hmm. check, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think government could do it.
Mm-hmm.
They could recoup their money by leasing that back to young farmers, and they could keep the consumer supplied
yeah.
with fresh, healthy vegetables.
Yeah. Like vegetable farmers who are already in operation, or other farmers, have other issues around labor. Because we talk about trying to get new entrants and so on, but the thing that I hear often is that they're scrambling to find somebody to help them.
Definitely. It's definitely a problem. My labor force is probably pretty good for the next 2 years, but it's a aged labor force.
Yeah.
I'm 61, my right-hand man is 72, and my two ladies that work here seasonal full-time, and I've worked here practically all their lives, is 64 and 65.
Mm.
And I have no resumes on file, and within the last 2 years, nobody have phoned me looking for a job. Believe it or not, even when student programs come out, none of them wants to come work on the farm.
Mm.
The sun, the bad weather, and the flies
mm.
are quite an impediment to a young person wanting to spend the summer on a farm. Yeah.
Do you think if we had more education at various levels talking about farming or whatever, would that change a little bit, or is it the culture has changed as well and students are on their iPhones and so on?
Cultural change.
Yeah.
It's just society has changed.
Yeah.
I guess why it was so easy for me to probably start farming when I was 18 or 19 years old. I grew up in a household where I knew what chores meant.
Mm-hmm.
I knew my daily chores, and I had senior citizens living next door to me that were well into their late 70s. Two senior citizens that lived alone, and I found I had to do their chores. I had to bring water for them and our own family. Thank God they didn't burn wood, but I had to bring in wood for our family.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no end to it. Then in the wintertime, it was snow shoveling and stuff. It was just a given.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, you seen everybody outdoors.
Right.
Last couple of evenings here, it's been nice, and I've went for a drive at 9 o'clock in the evening, and it's like I'm living in a ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
I challenge you to drive through those communities in the evening and see anybody outside,
mm-hmm.
whether it's young kids or adults. There's just,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a cultural change.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about young people being concerned about food, and so they're more interested in, well, food security and all those. Do you find any optimism out of that, or do you think that that will change? Is that more of an urban kind of phenomenon that never really quite percolates down to the farmer?
Younger people jump on the bandwagon with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we dabbled a little bit in beef.
Mm-hmm.
We heard the younger generation talking about, you know, this last few years, they wanted to eat free-range, grass-fed, healthy mm-hmm. beef. And dabbled into it a little bit, and I found that the younger generation wasn't willing to put their money where their mouth was.
Mm-hmm.
Our meat was really good, the price-wise, compared to mm-hmm. the supermarkets, but they still didn't.
Mm-hmm.
There was a percentage would come in and buy it, but there was a big percentage that just, no. And again, today, things are being prepared home differently, too. Like, mm-hmm. we're not seeing a lot put into cooking, but in our market, if I do look at the percentage of younger people, say 25 and under, is coming in, they are buying things that are more healthy for them, and I do see them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
It's encouraging.
Mm-hmm. There is a big plan to double food production in this province by 2022. Do you think it's going to work, or what are some things that might help it get close to that? You talked a little bit of land.
I don't think it's attainable to
yeah.
double production by
2022.
Although, I don't know, it's easier to double two and make four than what it is double 10 and make 20, isn't it?
It's non-supply managed food,
yeah.
too,
yeah.
which people don't
So if you've
understand.
Got, say, 30 acres in production and you double that to 60, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
But if you've got 500 in production
yeah.
and you're trying
yeah.
to double that to 1,000, then your numbers change
yeah.
completely, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we had some large russet potatoes left there last week. Beautiful potatoes. You could bring them here in the house and they were great boiled. If you made French fries with them, they were delicious. And I tried to sell them. And I even tried to market on the Avalon Peninsula. I was willing to load all those aboard my truck and go down and sell them. Nobody wanted large russets because they didn't work well in the peelers, the automatic peelers. They wanted a round potato that you could dump in and they would peel very easily in the machine. And one large wholesaler food operation said to me, you don't have to tell me. I know they make great fries, but nobody peels potatoes anymore by hand. And I said, I'll give you a good price on them. He said, even if you're giving them to me, I don't want them because I don't know what I'll do with them. So, we're sitting, wondering what we're going to do with those potatoes, and a little chip operation out in the valley. Someone told me she was looking for potatoes.
Yeah.
I phoned her up. I'll take all you got. She said, my God, she said, there's some bad potatoes coming in from the mainland now.
Mm-hmm.
She said, there's no way of cooking them. Within the last 3 days, I could have sold five times the amount of large potatoes, because all of a sudden,
yeah.
they're still hard to peel. But there's no other, there's
yeah.
nothing else around, and now everybody
yeah.
wants them. But I was, you know, I was very close to dumping them. When we talk about Dublin, like I just looked at the stats down in the U.S., that 58% of their potatoes goes to processing. There's a big demand, there's a big, not a demand, but there's, in this province, just the consumption I think we're less than 1% of the consumption of potatoes if we look at everything like from French fries and stuff.
Yeah.
And at least on the East Coast, when you go in and order fish and chips or anything, you do get real French fries and not frozen stuff. Where on this end of the province, you never hardly ever sees a fresh cut fry. Hardly ever.
Yeah.
And I think we can double. The land is there. The infrastructure is there. But not much sense to double if the marketing is not part of it.
Yeah.
If somebody is... We just grew... We've got 12 acres of potatoes planted. I could up that to 20, but I know I can sell 12. So until somebody comes and says, well, be part of this, and you can sell an extra 8, I'm not going to grow them, am I?
Yeah.
Plant your rows straight and long, temper them with prayer and song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. Old Crow watching hungrily from his perch in yonder tree. In my garden I'm as free as the feather he fought dead. Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone taste them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
So it's a Saturday afternoon. What does a farmer do Saturday afternoon? What's on the agenda next?
Today, it's actually we're going to seed a little bit of late broccoli and cauliflower in the greenhouse to be transplanted in August. Our turnip and cabbage transplants needs cultivation and top dressing. Needs a little extra fertilizer. And while I was waiting for you to show up, I was trying to replace a bearing in a cultivator. From the time April comes, I guess, until December, there's never a time when you can actually say, well, there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
There's times we take for ourselves. We like to go to the beach late in the evening and light a fire and watch the sunset. To us, that's relaxation. Sometimes we may take some wine or we may take a couple of beers. But listen to the fire crackling and the nice smell from the saltwater wood and just watch the sun air. We get some of the best sunsets in the world right here, where the sun actually goes right into the water.
Yeah.
That's our relaxation.
Yeah.
And to drive back and look and see that everybody's gone to bed at 9 o'clock.
That's right.
But there's never a time when you can actually go out through the door and say, nothing to do.
One last, I meant to ask this earlier, because you have good connections in Nova Scotia. You've gone back and forth, you know farmers there. What have you learned from farmers in Nova Scotia that maybe we could...
But the biggest thing I've seen is the cooperation between farms. Farmers are in close contact with one another. A lot of the farms over there got their own farm markets.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not, if they don't have something, say if one farm don't have celery, they don't mind going up the road and just buying it from another farmer and offering it in their markets.
Mm-hmm.
Found that a little bit more difficult with doing with farmers there. Farmers there always wanted to maintain that sense of independence.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't want to open up as much to their fellow farmers, or and maybe that's what hurt the industry a little bit.
Thanks so much, Oliver.
You're more than welcome.
That was Elvis Gillam, recorded in July of 2018 in his kitchen. This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. If you have questions, email me at fittoeatnl, that's one word, fittoeatnl@gmail.com. The music for this show included Harry Hibbs doing Inch by Inch by request from Elvis, and the theme song was Cluck Old Hen by Dirk Powell, John Herman, and Tim O'Brien. Thanks to the Newfoundland Labrador Federation of Agriculture and Food First NL for their support. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again. Take care. Happy trails.